That is such a beautiful song. For me, it's kind of an old song, but it's a beautiful song. And as we were singing that song, imagine this next judge, Samson, was here today singing that song. This story would have looked a lot different that we're going to read this morning. And so, good morning. We are on week 7 of 8 in our series in the book of Judges. And we are, like I said, we're looking at the person of Samson. And Samson was a unique judge in that he had superhuman strength, it seemed like, almost superhero strength. And as I was thinking of this story, a clip from the movie Spider-Man came to mind. Has anyone here seen the movie Spider-Man? Yeah. There is this conversation between Peter Parker, or Spider-Man, and his grandfather after he finds out he discovers he has superhuman abilities. And we're going to go ahead and play that clip for you right now. So just direct your attention to the screen behind me.
They ask him, you think? I don't know. I just don't know anymore.
Hey, well, going to the
Now, wait a minute, Peter. We need to talk.
Well, we can talk later.
Well, we can talk now, if you let me.
Well, what do we have to talk about? Why now?
Because we haven't talked at all for so long. Your Aunt May and I don't even know who you are anymore. You shirk your chores. You have all those weird experiments in your room. You start fights at school.
Start that fight. I told you that.
Yeah, well, you sure as hell finished.
What was I supposed to do? Run away?
No, you're not supposed to run away, but... Pete, look, you're changing. I know. I went through exactly the same thing at your age.
No, not exactly.
Peter, these are the years when a man changes into the man he's going to become the rest of his life. Just be careful who you change into. This guy, Flash Thompson, he probably deserved what happened. But just because you can beat him up, it doesn't give you the right to. Remember, with great power comes great responsibility.
Are you afraid that I'm going to turn into some kind of criminal? Quit worrying about me, okay? Something's different. I'll figure it out. Stop lecturing me, please.
I don't mean to lecture and I don't mean to preach. And I know I'm not your father.
Then stop pretending to be.
Pick up here at 10.
There's that one line in that clip where he says, with great power comes great responsibility. And that's the most memorable line of the movie. And so that's what I've entitled my message today. With great power comes great responsibility. And of course, Samson was a man of great superhuman physical strength. Now, if you don't remember what this guy would have looked like, here's a picture of what Samson may have looked like when Tony's ready. That's right. And if you were here last week, you would have seen that. I spent hours researching what he may have looked like. And that's what I came to. So if you can't tell, that's Steve Croker, his face photoshopped on the Incredible Hulk. Well, like I said, Samson was given superhuman strength, but he didn't always use his strength in the right way. Now imagine if Samson used his gift that God had used the gift that God had given him with the right attitude all the time. If he had that heart of the song we just sang, Lord, I give you my whole heart, my life, my everything. And now, as we're going through this story and we're going through it, I just want you to think through the gifts that God has given you. And we need to remind ourselves that we need to acknowledge that all the good things in our life come from God. And in a similar way, we need to be using our gifts, our talents, our resources for God with the right attitude instead of our own selfish, impulsive purposes. So we're going to go ahead. We're going to start off in chapter 13, verse 1. I can't read everything because the story is so long, but we'll do our best to get through the story. So chapter 13, verse 1, and guess what? You'll never guess it. The Israelites are sinning once again. They're back in their cycle, and they were enslaved for another 40 years with the Philistines ruling over them. So let's go ahead, Judges 13, verse 1 and following. Again, the Israelites did evil in the Lord's sight, so the Lord handed them over to the Philistines, who oppressed them for 40 years. In those days, a man named Manoah from the tribe of Dan lived in the town of Zorah. His wife was unable to become pregnant, and they had no children. The angel of the Lord appeared to Manoah's wife and said, "Even though you have been unable to have children, you will soon become pregnant and give birth to a son. So be careful. You must not drink wine or any other alcoholic drink, nor eat any forbidden food. You will become pregnant and give birth to a son, and his hair must never be cut." That's important. "For he will be dedicated to God as a Nazirite from birth. He will begin to rescue Israel from the Philistines." So let me just pause for a second. There might be some people sitting here saying, wondering, what in the world is a Nazirite? Well, a Nazirite was someone who was set apart for God's special service. Could have been for a special project or even for a whole lifetime, as was the case with Samson. And you need to remember, now, Nazirites followed certain rules, but in particular, you need to remember, like I said before, Samson's hair was not to be cut. On another note, isn't it interesting that this child Samson, he's chosen by God before he's born, before he's named, before he's conceived, before he's even thought of. God has chosen him. And in a similar way, when you feel down the dump some days, when you're depressed about life, or maybe life's hit you in the wrong way, remember that God knew you before you were born. He knew your name. He knew you before you were conceived, before you were even thought of. Psalm 139, Jeremiah verse 1, and also Jeremiah verse chapter 1, verse 5, give reference to that idea. Well, the story continues with the angel appearing again to Manoah and his wife, and the angel reconfirms what he had already told Manoah's wife. And it's so cool, first of all, that we're seeing angels appearing to people in the Old Testament. But the New Testament also says that angels appear in our world today. There could even be an angel sitting here amongst us, and we don't even know. Hebrews 13, verse 2 says, "Don't forget to show hospitality to strangers. For some who have done this have entertained angels without realizing it." So a cool angel appearance. We're going to skip over to verse 24. When her son was born, she named him Samson. And the Lord blessed him as he grew up. And the Spirit of the Lord began to stir him while he lived in Mahanadan, which is located between the towns of Zorah and Eshtaol. Let's go to chapter 14. One day when Samson was in Timnah, one of the Philistine women caught his eye. And Samson's going to have some bad luck with the ladies. But let's continue. When he returned home, he told his father and mother, "A young Philistine woman in Timnah caught my eye. I want to marry her. Get her for me." His father and mother objected. "Samson, come on. Are you sure?" I don't know. I don't know how fierce the objection would have been, but they had an issue with it. "Isn't there even one woman in our tribe or among all the Israelites you could marry?" they asked. "Why must it go to the pagan Philistines to find a wife?" But Samson told his father, "Get her for me. She looks good to me." As I read these verses, that song comes to mind. "Why you gotta be so rude? Marry that girl." That's probably what he was singing, right? His father and mother didn't realize the Lord was at work in this, creating an opportunity to work against the Philistines who ruled over Israel at that time. So you think Samson, of all people, he's an Israelite, but he's also a Nazirite, and he of all people should know, you should not be intermarrying with people who worship a different god, especially the Philistines who are ruling over you. But we're told that God, he uses the situation anyways. He figures out a way to work it. Now verse 5, and the verse that's following, we're going to get a first glimpse at Samson's strength. And following. So verse 5, "As Samson and his parents were going down to Timnah, a young lion suddenly attacked Samson near the vineyards of Timnah. At that moment, the Spirit of the Lord came powerfully upon him, and he ripped the lion's jaws apart with his bare hands. He did it as easily as if it were a young goat. Now, I'm not a farmer. I don't know how easy that is, but it seems pretty significant. But he didn't tell his father or mother about it. When Samson arrived in Timnah, he talked with the woman and was very pleased with her. Later, when he returned to Timnah for the wedding, he turned off the path to look at the carcass of the lion. And he found that a swarm of bees had made some honey in the carcass. And verse 9 is actually very interesting. And I'm going to go ahead and read that for you. He scooped some of the honey into his hands and ate it along the way. He also gave some to his father and mother, and they ate it. But he didn't tell them that he had taken the honey from the carcass of a lion. Now, this verse is significant because, remember, a Samson is a Nazarite. And back in Numbers chapter 6, there are a list of rules of what a Nazarite can and can't do. And in particular, a Nazarite could not come in contact with a dead body, even if it was your mother, your father, your sister, your brother, your children, whatever. And Samson is breaking this rule. This body isn't even a close relative. It's a dead lion. It's a dead animal. And not only is he coming into contact with this dead animal, but he's eating honey out of this dead animal. So let's summarize what Samson has been doing so far. First off, he's committing a big no-no by pursuing a Philistine woman, a woman who is worshiping another god. Number two, he's violating his Nazarite law vow by eating honey out of a dead carcass. And number three, he's now causing his parents to unknowingly be defiled as Israelites. They are also eating honey out of a dead carcass animal. Not good. The story continues with Samson putting on a wedding feast. He's given 30 Philistine companions, men, and he decides to place a bet with these guys. He gambles with them. And he says, listen, I got a riddle for you. If you can solve it within 7 days, I'm going to give you 30 fine linens and 30 sets of clothes. And if you can't solve it, then you owe me. You owe me big time. And so I imagine it's not wise to be placing bets with new friends, especially over things that seem to have a lot of value. It got to the point where I don't really know how expensive it was, but I think it was more than your average cost of clothes in today's world, because they got so intense, these men, these 30 Philistine men, that they went to Samson's wife and they begged her. Actually, they didn't beg her. They threatened to burn her and her family alive. Because they felt that they were about to be robbed. They couldn't figure out this riddle. And so, of course, she's worried about her life, her family's life, so she goes to Samson. She begs Samson, please tell me the answer to your riddle. And at the last moment, Samson caves. He tells her. She then goes, passes it on to the 30 men, and they solve the riddle just in time. And Samson, of course, is furious about this. And so this is what he does in verse 19. Then the Spirit of the Lord came powerfully upon him. He went down to the town of Ashkelon, killed 30 men, took their belongings, and gave their clothing to the men who had solved his riddle. Now, Samson here is impulsively killing 30 Philistine men. Remember that the people he gambled with were 30 Philistine men. So he's going and killing 30 Philistine men, taking their stuff, and giving their belongings to the other 30 Philistine men. How do you think this is going to go over? Not well. And so there's increased hostility now between Israel and the Philistines. But Samson was furious about what had happened. Oh, sorry, I already read that. No, I didn't. Here we go. Verse 19-ish. But Samson was furious about what had happened, and he went back home to live with his father and mother. Verse 20 is a very interesting verse. It's a game-changer verse. So his wife was given in marriage to the man who had been Samson's best man at the wedding. Ouch, yeah. That's not going to end well. Chapter 15. Later on, during the wheat harvest, Samson took a young goat as a present to his wife. He said, I'm going into my wife's room to sleep with her. But her father wouldn't let him. The romance was different back in the day, I guess. I truly thought you must hate her, her father explained. So I gave her in marriage to your best man. Oh, okay. But look, her younger sister is even more beautiful than she is. Marry her instead. Samson said, "This time I cannot be blamed for everything I am going to do to you Philistines." Then he went out and caught 300 foxes. He tied their tails together in pairs, and he fastened a torch to each pair of tails. Then he lit the torches and let the foxes run through the grain fields of the Philistines. He burned all their grain to the ground, including the sheaves and the uncut grain. He also destroyed their vineyards and olive groves. Now this, it's quite obvious to say that this would have been incredibly economically just devastating. And so this would have even made the Philistines even more angry. The hostility is now just probably burning amongst the Philistines. "Who did this?" the Philistines demanded. "Samson," was the reply, "because his father-in-law from Timnah gave Samson's wife to be married to this best man, to his best man." So the Philistines went and got the woman and her father and burned them to death. And so these, the woman and her family are in a lose-lose situation, it seems, by being associated with Samson. The story continues with things going from bad to worse. Samson is now going on a rampage. He's killing more Philistines, and then he goes and runs and hides. The Philistines come looking for him, and the people of Judah tie Samson up and hand him over to the Philistines. And then verse 14 says this, "As Samson arrived at Leah, the Philistines came shouting in triumph. But the Spirit of the Lord came powerfully upon Samson, and he snapped the ropes off his arms as if they were burnt strands of flax, and they fell from his wrists. Then he found the jawbone of a recently killed donkey. He picked it up and killed 1,000 Philistines with it." Now that is absolutely outstanding. A few weeks ago, we talked about Gideon, and we did the math, and we said that I think it was about the size of Gideon's army was 0.25% of the entire enemy army. And if you do the math here, I believe it's 0.1%, one guy against 1,000 guys. Now, he could have been battling more guys, but was only able to kill 1,000 of them, only 1,000 of them. And so God is obviously in the mix here, doing something incredible for Samson to do this incredible feat. And we're reminded of his incredible, incredible strength. Verse 16, "Then Samson said, 'With the jawbone of a donkey, I've piled them in heaps. With the jawbone of a donkey, I've killed 1,000 men.'" Now notice who Samson gives the credit to. Let me read that again. "With the jawbone of a donkey, I've piled them in heaps. With the jawbone of a donkey, I've killed 1,000 men." So here's a question for you and for me. Who gets the credit in your life for the good things that have come your way? Maybe your business is doing well. Was it because you did it, or was it because God did it? Maybe you've got some gifts and talents that that you're proud to have, and rightfully so, but do you give yourself the credit, or does God get the credit? Verse 20. "Samson judged Israel for 20 years during the period when the Philistines dominated the land." And so as imperfect as Samson is, he's impulsive and selfish. Maybe doesn't have the best reputation. As imperfect as Samson is, Samson is made the judge of Israel, and God still, in his mercy, continues to work with Samson. Chapter 16, verse 1. "One day Samson went to the Philistine town of Gaza," which is, by the way, Philistine territory at this time, "and spent the night with a prostitute. Word soon spread that Samson was there, so the men of Gaza gathered together and waited all night at the town gates. They kept quiet during the night, saying to themselves, 'When the light of morning comes, we will kill him.'" So again, remember, Samson has killed thousands of Philistines. He's just devastated them economically, so these guys just want his head. They want a piece of him. "But Samson stayed in bed only until midnight. When he got up, he took hold of the doors of the town gate, including the two posts, lifted them up, bar and all. He put them on his shoulders and carried them all the way to the top of the hill across from Hebron." So I imagine this gate would have been a huge, heavy gate, but he does it by himself. He walks far, he walks uphill. and he's showing off. I don't know what he's doing. And again, we see his superhero powers at work. Verse 4. Enter Delilah. Sometime later, Samson fell in love with a woman named Delilah, who lived in the valley of Sorek. Now, our commentator, Wilcox, suggests that Sorek was neither Philistine territory or Israelite territory, just a random woman in his life, woman number three that we know of. The rulers of the Philistines went to her and said, "Entice Samson to tell you what makes him so strong and how he can be overpowered and tied up securely. Then each of us will give you 1,100 pieces of silver." Now, if you do the math, just a little bit of looking around, an estimate of what they were offering her was approximately $30 million. And so these guys have had in our today's Canadian dollars, and so these guys had had enough, and they were willing to pay big money to get this guy dealt with. And so Delilah, she gets to work. Love and money don't mix well, and she wants the money. So the story continues with Delilah asking Samson, "Samson, what makes you so strong? And what is someone going to do to subdue you?" So Samson responds. He makes something up, and he says, "Oh, if you tie me up with some bowstrings, that'll do the trick." And so that night, she ties him up with some bowstrings. She calls the Philistines in to ambush him. And as the Philistines are coming in, she tells Samson to wake up. He wakes up. He breaks the bowstrings and doesn't work. Now, you figure at this point, Samson would have it figured out. You know, this girl is bad news. It's time to call it quits and go move on with life. But she keeps on him. "Samson, what makes you so strong, and what is someone going to do to subdue you?" "Well, okay, if you tie me up with new ropes, that'll do the trick." So the same thing happens that very night. She ties him up with new ropes. The Philistines come in. She calls Samson to wake him up. He wakes up. He breaks off the ropes. No problem. Doesn't work. "Samson, you should get this figured out by now." But she tries again, a third attempt. Same conversation. "Samson, you're embarrassing me. What's going on? What do we got to do to make sure you're subdued?" "Well, if you braid my hair, that'll do the trick." And so she braids his hair that very night. The Philistines come in. She calls Samson to wake up. The Philistines are coming. He wakes up. He unties the braids and doesn't work. Nothing happens. And she gets to the point where she is just absolutely frustrated. And the story continues in verse 15, and this is somewhat comical, actually, but sad at the same time. "And then Delilah pouted, 'How can you tell me I love you when you don't share your secrets with me? You've made fun of me three times now, and you still haven't told me what makes you so strong.' She tormented him with her nagging day after day until he was sick to death of it. And eventually, he caves. He can't take it anymore. And he tells her that he was a Nazirite, and if his hair were to be cut, remember, if his hair were to be cut, his strength would leave him. And so that very night, she cuts his hair. His strength leaves him. But verse 20 says not only his strength left him, but the Lord left him. And the story continues in verse 21 of Samson being captured by the Philistines finally. So the Philistines captured him and gouged out his eyes. They took him to Gaza, where he was bound with bronze chains and forced to grind grain in the prison. But before long, his hair began to grow back. The Philistine rulers held a great festival offering sacrifices and praising their god, Dagon. They said, "Our God has given us victory over our enemy, Samson." When the people saw him, they praised their God, saying, "Our God has delivered our enemy to us. The one who killed so many of us is now in our power." Half drunk by now, the people demanded, "Bring out Samson so he can amuse us." So he was brought from the prison to amuse them, and they had him stand between the pillars supporting the roof. Samson said to the young servant who was leading him by the hand, "Place my hands against the pillars that hold up the temple. I want to rest against them." Now the temple was completely filled with people. All the Philistine rulers were there, and there were about 3,000 men and women on the roof who were watching as Samson amused them. Then Samson prayed to the Lord, "Sovereign Lord, remember me again, O God. Please strengthen me just one more time. With one blow, let me pay back the Philistines for the loss of my two eyes." And so, unlike the beginning of this story, notice now who Samson gives the credit to. God, give me my strength back. And his motives aren't necessarily maybe the most purest, but God answers him. Then Samson put his hands on the two center pillars that held up the temple. Pushing against them with both his hands, he prayed, "Let me die with the Philistines." And the temple crashed down on the Philistine rulers and on all the people. So he killed more people when he died than when he had during his entire lifetime. Later, his brothers and other relatives went down to get his body. They took him back home and buried him between Zorah and Eshtaol, where his father Manoah was buried. Samson had judged Israel for 20 years. And so that's the story of Samson. I just want to make a couple comments as I close. Now, Samson, we know, was incredibly, he had incredible physical strength. A very strong person, but he was arguably a weak leader. He seemed selfish at times, impulsive. He fell for cheap love. He had lady issues. And he didn't really rally the troops as the other judges, some of the other judges had done. But God still uses Samson in the midst of all of his weaknesses, in the midst of all of his limitations, his mistakes, his addictions, etc. And I hope that encourages you and I that if God can use a guy like Samson, with all of his hang-ups and mistakes, he could certainly use a guy or a gal like you and me. I'm so thankful for that. And remember that God is still fulfilling his perfect will while working with imperfect people and imperfect leaders. He's still doing his thing. Sometimes what some people meant for evil, God intends for good. And remember, like we said a couple weeks ago, remember God's immeasurable patience. That with the fact that God still works with a man like Samson with all of his mistakes. And I want to come back to where we started. With great power comes great responsibility. The fact is that God has given he's given us all powers, maybe not superpowers, but he's given us all gifts. He's given us gifts. And so I need to ask, are you using your gifts for God? Or are you using your gifts for your own selfish, impulsive purposes? Maybe God's gifted you to be a very successful business person. I don't know. And you know how to make a good living. And maybe he's calling you to give more than what you think. God has given you the gift of administration. Are you administering and organizing things for God? What about teaching? Maybe he's given you the gift of teaching or leading. If God has given you the gift of leading, are you just warming a pew or are you doing something about it? Are you using your gift for God? What about helps? The gift of helps, those are my favorite people. Sure, I'll do anything. Sign me up. Are you a computer geek? And I say that in a complimentary way. Are you using your computer geek skills for God? Fill in the blank. Whatever gift, strength, or resource God has given you, are you using it for him? I want to just briefly call up the nomination committee on the stage just right now. If you're on the nomination committee, Larry and Dave and whoever else is here, Eva, come on up on the stage right now, Helga. Yeah, perfect. Little commercial here that ties in very well with the message. And you guys can just come on the front, wherever you want to stand so people can see you. And Tony might have a picture of some others just in the back here. The nomination committee has serves a couple purposes. Their primary purpose every year is to nominate people for specific roles in our church where certain specific positions need to be filled. And so as a result, they're going to be contacting, I got to stand over here because it's a little bit of an echo. They're going to be contacting calling some people, asking some people if they would like to be able to, if they would like to serve in certain areas in the church. And the hope would be that we can get these positions filled. But the other purpose that we're hoping for them to serve is for them to partner with the elders, with the staff, with ministry leaders. If you have a desire to serve in ministry here at our church, you can come and contact any one of these people, and they would be more than happy to try to hook you up and get you set up in a ministry somewhere in our church. So please see them or myself or the elders or ministry leaders if you want to get serving somewhere. So thank you, Nomination Committee. You guys can have a seat. So again, let me ask that question once again. Whatever gift, whatever strength, whatever resource you have, whatever that God has given you, are you using it for Him? And remember that if God has given you a gift, if He's given you a power, a superpower, whatever it is, you have a responsibility to use it for God in some way, I believe. I'm just going to call up those who are participating or are helping with communion to come forward. And just as I transition a time of prayer, and the worship team too, you're welcome to come back too. Lord, thank you for your patience, my goodness. Thank you for your grace, your mercy in our lives, that you work with imperfect people like me and Samson and everyone else here, Lord. We pray, Lord, now as we reflect on communion and how this all ties in with what we've been talking about, Lord. We just pray that as we partake in your communion, that we will be reminded of your grace and your patience in our lives. Amen.